it's a warm intro. Like, this could be my warm intro right now. I'll just, like, randomly fade in and be like, yeah, I just like to start the show. Right, I'll just start the show whenever, randomly, and people will, I don't know. But thank you all for joining. We have Kevin, John, and Nupur. I won't use last names, but frankly, with a minimal amount of Google research, people will find your names. Especially Nupur. Like, it's not
I'll probably
be...
just blurt out someone's name also.
If you cross-reference Nupur and Joey Lombardi, which I'm not hiding my name, I'm sure there will be something that pops up. Not that I'm encouraging anyone to do that. What a treat. We have a panel discussion this week to discuss social media. Is social media blasé? Is this a boring topic?
Not at all.
I think now, yeah, it is. We should have had this discussion like 5 years ago.
5 years ago? No, you would have been like a freshman in college, right?
5 years ago is when we were posting really stupid things on our Facebook, personally at least.
Well, that's the whole point of it. I read a book a couple of weeks ago, and it's by a gentleman named John Ronson, and he wrote a book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And the gist of the book is people say something stupid on social media. There's all these politically correct people out in the world that take umbrage, and that umbrage turns into revenge. And then suddenly you have all of these people out in social media that are shaming someone who did something theoretically egregious. The example that he always uses, so I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything. Do you guys remember, this was probably about a year ago, some woman got on a plane to Africa and she tweeted this like awful comment like, I'm going to Africa, I hope I don't get AIDS or something like that.
And then she shut off her phone light and like...
Was that during the Ebola crisis?
No, I think it was before the Ebola crisis, but she basically goes to sleep on the plane. Someone catches wind of it, and then there's this countdown that's happening on Twitter. These people are like effectively destroying this woman's life. They get her fired from her job. She doesn't even know it. She goes to sleep, her phone shut off. Then these people are counting down from when she's actually when she touches down, and then there are people who are actually taking pictures of her while she's getting her luggage. She has no idea what's happening. You know, she wakes up and she's basically like, oh, I've lost my job. The entire world hates me.
What?
Right.
All during the flight?
All during the flight. This all happened in about 14 hours. And then she falls off the social media's conscious. People forget about her. Her life is effectively ruined. She still can't get a job. And if you're just having a bad day or you're just having an off day and you post something extremely stupid that goes viral, are you guys worried about that ever?
I personally am not worried, but like I know there's all those stories about people that might run their company's social media accounts. So, like, you have two accounts logged in on your phone and people will accidentally tweet or, like, post something on their corporate account that they would have put, like, on their personal one. That would be stressful.
Everybody's like, oh, millennials and technology, they love their Twitter. Would social media management even be a job that someone that you guys would be interested in?
I never really thought about that until just now, actually.
I had a social media internship.
Well, what did the job entail? What did you have to do?
So it was a startup, and basically I had to like research and publish content for every single social media site. That was my freshman year of college, so in like 2009. So social media was in a different stage, I think. And that's when those games were really popular, like Farmville and all kinds of things that would like connect with Facebook. So it was a lot of like researching how can we connect the website to social media and get people to join and like follow all the social media accounts so that they can like earn points or things like that for the company.
For me, I wouldn't be worried about having the job if I had it strictly separate from my personal life, but a situation where everything's molded into one where your social media presence is your personal and business life, that is to me is really scary because like you said, one misstep and it's all in shambles. Like you can spend years building this reputation and then all it takes is one stupid tweet that you could post it and within a second somebody screenshots it, you could delete it, and then all of a sudden it's all over all the news sites. Everybody's got their own spin on it. They're researching your life, they're researching all the stuff about you, and it's like there's no chance for you to do a rebuttal because it's all gone. So if you were going to be like in charge of a company Facebook, you'd probably be doing the real bland, like, tell me about your experience with our product. And then the negative stuff, you just send them to customer support and things like that. And real, very politically correct. For example, like an NFL player, these guys, they do one stupid thing and it's like people jump on them instantaneously.
They're expected to be brand ambassadors. They're expected to be role models. Do you think that there is an assault on real opinions right now? But it all ties into the safe space college culture where there isn't a lot of tolerance for extreme thinking or an extreme opinion one way or the other, whether it's to the left or to the right. It sounds like college campuses are becoming more, or I should say less tolerant of extreme or variant opinions. I was going to say you're a couple years removed from that. Did you see that emerging? Do you think that this is something legitimate, or do you think it's something the media is spinning?
I mean, I think it's more of a media thing, and maybe that is, like you said, because we're a couple of years removed. But I, at least personally, have definitely heard way more about this so-called repression of free speech than actually experienced repression of free speech.
I think, like, and you don't even have to be extreme. I feel like people will just attack anything that they see on the internet.
But are they attacking under the guise of good taste, and that they are attacking for righteousness as opposed to I'm being a troll? That seems to be where things are shifting, where like this Justine Sacco, she says something outrageous, and then suddenly there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people that are flooding her company, telling them to fire her. Who's the justified person in that situation? Her intent was to actually be sarcastic and make fun of that entitlement and that privilege. It came across wrong.
I don't know. I mean, that's complicated. I think to an extent, things used to be that you could pretty much express any opinion and feel safe in that the people around you are the ones that heard it. And you may say something that's a little inflammatory, but you know that, I mean, worst case scenario, you're going to get yelled at or reprimanded by the people around you, but the whole world doesn't hear your opinion. Where I think now everybody wants to be, kind of gets a satisfaction out of being the person to point out the failure in somebody else on like a large stage. And it happens so fast that it's like, I'm not even sure that that's the right thing to do anymore, because somebody will do something stupid, then somebody points it out, and then everybody goes super overboard and just ruins this person's life. We're no better because we just publicly shamed this person, and just people make mistakes and people say stupid things. That's what we do. But now this person is condemned for all eternity to just be that person, or they're always remembered for it because of, I mean, everything's permanent now too. So I think about this a lot, and who's right or who's wrong, it always seems to be very blurred because there's so many different nuances to every situation.
Do you think that there is a tolerance in our society for people to be able to make a mistake?
That's a really profound way of looking at it.
I think that comes into play with politics. They're tiptoeing and dancing around all this stuff so much that you're like, personally, I feel like I'm not even reading policy or reading about what somebody publishes as their public stance. I can't trust anything as truth anymore because you got a team of people telling you what the masses are going to like. And if you're constantly worried about your polls and stuff, you're going to pick whatever the right thing to say is. And it doesn't matter when you get into office. Free thought is sometimes hindered when you're constantly worried about backlash.
Can a politician really express themselves and offer the public a true opinion? It just seems like you're just waiting for that guy to say something that knocks themselves out. So it's not like you won. It's just the process of elimination and self-elimination at that.
I don't even think that has to do with social media. I think that just has to do with the question that people just can't say anything stupid or everyone's going to attack them.
Well, you just can't take anything back now. I think that's where the social media element is. It's permanent. If it's, you know, if it's recorded, everything just propagates so much faster, whether it's a quote,
A video clip. Yeah, it definitely spreads. It becomes viral and goes like everywhere.
And you guys aren't afraid of that at all?
I am. Not to keep hogging the mic here, but I think about that all the time. And I think subconsciously I've slowly diminished my public presence. I mean, my Twitter's private, my Facebook's private, and I don't really publish as much as I used to personally.
I was going to say, I don't think I worry about it. Like, I miss just using social media for fun and not having to worry about when I was in college, everyone was like, hide everything because employers will look at your profile. I understand like why they might want to do that, but I wish that social media could have just been something that we used for fun and we didn't have to like worry about everyone seeing everything and constantly like what image are you projecting and what's your personal brand on the internet.
So let me take that a step further. You're careful about your social media. You have all of your stuff locked down. You don't say anything that ticks anybody off. You don't express your opinions publicly. You're a good social media citizen. But let's say you're at a bar. You get drunk or you have a few too many drinks. You start ragging on a coworker that's not there. You get this epic rant. You are saying some of the funniest stuff you have ever said in your life. Some person at the table next to you thinks it's hilarious too, whips out their phone, records you. It goes viral. You've been recorded without your consent. Is that a fear for any of you guys? And I'll give you a real world example, but I just want to hear your opinion about that.
I don't even think that thought has ever crossed my mind. But now that you said it, it's a little
terrifying.
Yeah, like I don't think it'll affect my daily life. But now that you mentioned it, like, yeah, that does kind of suck that at any point someone could just like take a video of you doing something stupid.
In that John Ronson book, these two dudes went to a tech conference and somebody's last name was Butler or something like that. And they were like, but something stupid like that. This woman, she was a tech reporter, recorded them saying something like that. And again, it was really stupid. It wasn't something that was extremely egregious. It was something dumb like that. It was potty humor. She recorded it, or she took pictures of these guys. She posted it on her blog or whatever blog that she was writing for. Dudes lost their jobs. The thing went viral. It spun into this whole misogyny in the tech world. It's too much of a bro culture. But then people defended those guys. It ended up turning around. The media then turned on the girl that wrote the article. She ended up getting fired.
Really?
They turned around. They ended up ruining her life.
Vicious cycle.
Oh, man. The repercussions of a butt joke.
Because of a butt joke. But anybody can be turned into a viral parody with the right amount of alcohol and bad decision making.
To take like a little sidetrack, I think this makes me think a lot about fame and just the consequences of being famous, as it's pretty closely related to what we're talking about. And I think when I was younger, I remember as being a kid, the thought of being famous was cool. I mean, as a young kid, you thought, oh, how cool would it be to be a famous singer or a movie star? But now, I think ever since I was a preteen, I mean, early teenager, the thought of being famous has terrified me. I in no way want to have any public attention for the exact reasons we've been talking about now. I mean, anytime you do something, you're getting reviewed. I mean, we talk about an instant viral video and somebody might get blown up into the public spotlight, but that sometimes now I feel is gone. And you know, you have the next day's news cycle and the next day something is all the rage that day and they kind of forget. But if you're somebody who's famous enough that people are constantly checking in, see what you're doing, I feel like you can never live a normal life, that you have to tiptoe everywhere and cultivate your presence. And that might mess with your, you know, your own thought of self and your, the way you view the world. So personal, just fear of mine, I think.
But that brings up a good question, guys. John and Nupur, you've participated in these podcasts. This is the second podcast. Kevin, this is your first one. I know from the blog and then from doing these podcasts weekly, there's trepidation. I have a fear. I think I mentioned this to you guys before. I'm afraid that somebody may perceive something that I've said on these podcasts incorrectly, a coworker or a professional acquaintance. I mean, I keep doing it because I think this is rewarding and it helps expand my skill set. I also feel that there's a risk, and now I've unfortunately or I've sucked you into my web of potential issues, and we moderate this to try to protect any exposure there. Would you have concerns joining a podcast where you can be tracked back and somebody might say, I didn't like what you said in that podcast, blah, 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 insert detrimental career issue into this conversation?
I don't think we're saying anything on the podcast that we probably wouldn't say in public. Everything that I've said so far on this podcast and the one we did last time, I would say at work, I would say at the grocery store. So I don't feel like if someone came up to me and they said that they didn't like what I said on the podcast, I don't think I would be offended. I would just, I mean, this is my opinion. You're entitled to your opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion. I don't think we're saying anything so extreme that it would affect us negatively.
But where's that threshold? Is our tolerance dwindling on what is acceptable? What is an acceptable activity? Are you guys comfortable with a company, let's say there's some new social technology or site that becomes available and a company suddenly dictates the terms of which information you can share? Is that something that you're comfortable with? Because it's after your employment, or do you think that that's invasive?
I think only in on you know websites or media outlets where it's acceptable and or somewhat required, like LinkedIn, for example. Yeah, I listed there. You know, on any other social media, if they required you to list your like the place you work and there wasn't any, you know, obvious benefit or reason for doing that, I definitely wouldn't join.
I don't know if I understand. So you're saying they limit how you can speak about the company after you've left, or they require you to advertise the fact that you worked for the company?
You guys started working in a post-Facebook world.
Yep.
So your employment, I'm not going to say your employment was predicated on terms and conditions of Facebook, but like Napoor said earlier, she knew not to have certain topics or genres or subject materials available or presented on her social media accounts because that could be detrimental to her acquiring a job. For an older person like myself, social media didn't exist. So I have been employed prior to the invention or the propagation of social media. As you're using it, as you're using these new things and there's no guidance, now it sounds like common sense. There was no guidance initially, and now suddenly you think is some frivolity of, oh, look, you and your buddy are sitting there, one of those hats with the two beers with the tube going through and you're drinking your beers and you think it's a perfectly harmless picture that's been on your social media site for 5 years. And by the way, I don't own one of those hats and this did not happen. But let's say that happened and somebody in HR suddenly is rolling through your profile and finds this picture from 5 or 6 years ago and takes offense at it. What's your take on that? Do you think it's normal to have to go back and basically cleanse 10 years of internet history because there's changing appetites and changing levels of acceptability in the socially electronic world?
The moment that my social media has to be public and I can't turn something to private or just delete entirely or selectively, you know, configure it so certain people can see certain things, I think I will be completely out. You know, I'm going to try to delete whatever it is because I personally set everything to private before I applied to co-ops in my job. And I knew that I thought of that exact scenario because I've heard people saying they go to the interview and somebody has pictures printed out and said, what's this? You were at this party doing this. And even though it's an absurd thought to me, I just put everything on private. But I could kind of see a future where suddenly that becomes a thing where there's enough invasive access where people can figure out something you posted. And I don't know. I think that's a little bit of a scary world to live in, that you have to be that careful.
I'm going to take it further. Let's assume that social media, and I'm going to kind of use more of a Twitter than a Facebook model here. Twitter, in the last 5 or 6 years, there has been major social milestones and events that have occurred because of information that's leaked on Twitter. The situations in the Middle East and in Egypt. News seems to break faster on Twitter, and it's used as a legitimate life-saving tool. As these situations occur, where normal users like you and I feel more threatened to share and interact with these social media platforms because of either fear of being publicly shamed by the masses or being investigated by potential employers, do you think that there is a negative social impact where now people are not connecting socially, they're not sharing information because they're afraid? They're plugging out, basically. Now we're going back to the more traditional news media outlets. That information is being controlled and filtered, maybe through a certain political or socioeconomic lens. Do you feel like you're being forced out? And by being forced out, do you think that that's detrimental?
Well, like if you can make something private, then I don't feel like I'm worried about what I'm putting out there. If for some reason they got rid of the privacy stuff where everyone could see everything that you were posting, then I think it would be bad. But right now, for us personally, you can choose who you want to see your stuff.
I think there's definitely, when you have social media outlets like Twitter, where information can spread so rapidly, there's obviously a good and a bad side of it. But I think there's still a line between, you know, the beneficial aspects and the sort of detrimental aspects. In a situation where news, something like Twitter, allows news to spread quickly and potentially save lives during a tragedy or a time of crisis, I think, you know, someone who chooses to participate in that social event, if you will, is not going to be held back by concerns that their employer or a peer might see something and take offense to it. there's definitely a line between helping out fellow survivors of a tragedy and, you know, someone's career being ruined over a stupid picture or something like that.
I think something's got to give with the amount of noise there is. I think it's just there's more and more every year, just more outlets for information, and things spread so fast that something's got to happen where things start to get dumbed down, where even if you blow up for saying something, there's enough going on that people aren't even that worried about it anymore. There's some way that somebody's going to come up with some tool to vet things quicker, because a lot of times we said with Twitter, things come out and then 2 seconds later, somebody says that source is false. Something I kind of wanted to touch on because it's a good example of repercussions of social media is social media and the stock market. It's fascinating to me how quickly stocks move and just companies can go completely underwater based on certain events getting leaked on media. And you don't necessarily have certain people vetted. Certain people have interests in the stock. You know, they might want to see it do badly because they have a short position in a stock. They may have some sort of connection with somebody behind the scenes that we're not seeing. And during market hours, somebody could publish some damning piece of literature on a company, and there's tons of people out there that are getting affected in a financial sense. So it's not even just, oh no, my public image is ruined. I'm losing money as we speak. And sometimes it takes a couple of days for the SEC or whoever to get involved. And I'm very curious because there's a whole microcosm of things happening in the stock market related to social media. And it's a war, literally, on Twitter of opinions. And you read through it, and it's baffling to see who's right, who's wrong, what's going to happen.
John, that's a really interesting point. I remember, I think it might have been a couple of years ago now, when the AP Twitter got hacked and someone reported, like, they had a phony tweet about, like, explosions at the White House and saying that the president was injured.
I remember that.
And they cleared it up in like 15 minutes. But in that 15-minute window, the S&P dropped like 40% or something crazy like that. And that's, you know, that's easier to correct when you have, you know, when it's on a more macro scale. But if some damning information were to come out about a company, that could take a lot longer for, you know, a stock to normalize after an event like that.
The stock market is an interesting beast in itself because it's sort of like the Lemmings approach. People just have a tendency of following in patterns. So if you can get the lemmings moving in a certain direction, they're all going to fall off the cliff.
Exactly. Momentum is everything. Yeah, I think there's, it's a good analog for social media, but it's different, like you said, that it's very one-sided in that you see stuff happening and people will put their own spin on it. I didn't want to take it completely off track, but I think it's kind of interesting.
Oh, it's definitely a valid point. There's a human element to the stock market that could be manipulated, and social media is a part of that portfolio now.
Yeah, I think to tie it together too, I mean, you don't know who's, you know, you got people like Rupert Murdoch who owns a massive media conglomerate, and you don't know how that filters down to different sites. And you may read some site that you think is awesome, and then one day you learn that they're getting funding from a certain source. So their editors may say, hey, don't publish that article about this because, you know, that's against what our investors like. So filter that through social media, and there's all kinds of different variables that come into play.
There was a time where an individual or holding company couldn't own multiple media outlets in a certain market because it was a manipulation of the news. Theoretically, one person is controlling all of these different news and information outlets, and you couldn't do that. Well, the newspapers start failing, TV stations aren't making money, radio stations aren't making money. What happens? These guys can come in, they could snap up all the radio stations in a market, they could snap up a television station, and they could buy newspapers all across the country. You have a national platform. And they've basically killed a lot of those markets. But if you look at what the news was 40 years ago, you had some degree of journalistic and information quality. These newspaper markets start consolidating, the radio stations start consolidating. Now you have these talking heads. And that there's a spin on your information is what drew people to social media to begin with. I know that was really long-winded, but what is your take on true information sources and what can you trust?
I think it's sad. I don't think people realize sometimes that things are skewed. So sometimes someone might just watch one news channel all the time and they might just think that way. But like people don't realize that like you could watch two different stations and hear the same story and have a different opinion on both stations.
So you guys, all three of you are millennials. A lot of the things that I've been reading over the last couple of weeks is how certain websites and certain news sites are skewed and geared towards presenting information that millennials will like. So now it's not about a political leaning. It's about an age demographic. What's your thoughts on that? Do you find that to be comforting, or do you find that to be alarming that someone thinks that you wouldn't read and interpret the news the same way as someone from a different generation?
What are those websites, and how are they, like, what makes them think that we'll read those websites versus another website?
Well, one is definitely mic.com, M-I-C.com. That's a news site that's geared towards millennials.
I never even heard of that.
And then there's a career website. I'm trying to find the name of it.
The Daily Muse, because I like that.
Yes. Yes, that's it.
I love the Daily Muse. So I'm falling for their millennial trap, I guess.
But why do you, what is it about that site that you like more than any other career website?
Like, what are other career websites that you would compare it?
You know, when I send out those reports, I check CIO.com, Entrepreneur.com. It's sort of the same kind of articles. They're not listicles. I feel like that's maybe like a Gen X and whatever my generation is. Those sort of bulleted things are more geared towards us. It's like 500 words and or less. There's big pictures that anchor the whole site. It doesn't say anything.
Yeah, people love lists. I see so many lists. 10 things or 15 things that you didn't know, or 15 things you can do to do X. And like you said, big, large pictures, and kind of, I guess they're assuming that we're like goldfish and we need something to kind of constantly jump to keep our attention.
Yeah, it looks great. It looks visually appealing, but there's just not a lot of content in the words. I want to hear what Nabor says about that.
You guys are going to hate me, but sometimes I like lists. Like, I just like to read a summary of every article. I just don't want to spend that much time reading, like, long article after long article. So I actually like those articles that have lists. I mean, sometimes. The ones that are, like, 30 things you should do before you turn 30. Like, those ones I hate. When it's, like, 10 steps to take before an interview, I just like reading the steps quickly.
Yeah, I actually agree. I mean, I like it when it's distilled down for you so you don't have to spend a lot of time. And I have a different method where I go through a lot of news and advice and different sections on Reddit. But I would say that sometimes it's pretty poor of a source for news, because you get, and for people listening that wouldn't know, Reddit's a popular forum to discuss any kind of news, any kind of personal interests. And it's a voting system. So the top voted comment, you may click on a thread that you're 10 hours late to the discussion, and the top voted comment says something, and it's based on some myopic viewpoint where they read the article and they asserted something that wasn't true, and everybody kind of just jumps on the bandwagon, upvotes it, and agrees. Where sometimes I might get the wrong impression of something. Because Nipur, like you, I'll see a headline, read the article, look for the article, and it's 5 pages long and I don't have time to read it. So I'll go to the comments. Top comment, they think like they know what's going on in the article, but it's actually not the full truth. So it's interesting. I usually go to a different site, but I may be looking for the same thing that you are, and I might be getting incorrect information.
The point of my first comment was, do you feel like if a site says that they're specifically messaging towards your age group, do you find that alarming, like you're potentially missing something, or do you find that comforting?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's good, but definitely not alarming. I mean, when you think about it from the perspective of the people running these sites or news outlets or blogs or whatever they are, they're trying to get viewers and readers, so they want to target the demographic that will get them the most page views with the least amount of effort. And I think it's, you know, luckily for them, it happens to be that simple articles with not a lot of content and big pictures appeal to a lot of people regardless of their age, so that works out. But if, you know, if I hear of some site that's trying specifically to market towards millennials, it's probably not a site that I'm going to, you know, derive a lot of my news from, just because it's definitely not painting the whole picture.
Do you think that you're being conditioned?
I wouldn't say conditioned, but I definitely would say pandered to, looked down upon. I wish I was there for the Millennials podcast, because I have a lot of opinions on that whole situation.
Kevin, sounds like we're on the same team.
Yeah, I don't like being treated like some species in like a cage in a lab that people are just studying. I don't know. And obviously, none of us millennials were there for when Gen X and baby boomers were our age. But it seems like there's a lot of, it's like millennials are looked at as this subset of the population rather than just an age group.
And that's exactly what I was sort of getting to. I think some of the mischief, and this goes into social media, the true back end piece of social media is advertising. You're interacting with these sites for free. It's accumulating all of this information about you, your habits, how long you look at something, what you're clicking on, what colors you like that attract more attention and clicks. All of this information is being studied, and your generation is definitely the first ones, which is why I think a lot of this attention is being placed on you guys and why you're sort of, like you said, lab specimens. I think that's why there is a lab specimen approach to some of this, because there's all this behavioral information about how you interact with news and with computers and all this stuff that they're going to know about you for your entire life, the full lifespan of you that they don't have for me as an adolescent, but they will for you. And it's this weird, funky lab experiment that doesn't have a start and or a true intent in the beginning. But what are they going to do with this information?
There's a hell of a lot more data on our generation. That's for sure.
That's right. And there's all kinds of presumptions being made and conclusions being drawn that may not necessarily be right.
Correlation does not equal causation. That's all I'll say.
That went down a rat hole. I did not mean to take this down that rat hole, but I thought it's good. I mean, it was a good conversation.
It always does.
That's a really good connection, though. I'm kind of embarrassed I never thought of that myself.
I put that together as we were talking.
It makes sense.
Do you feel like you should at some point just get off of social media? Do you think that there's a benefit for being on there?
I mean, I personally use Twitter more as a news filter than anything else. Facebook, not much, you know. I mean, I don't think there's any definitive answer on when people should or should not have social media accounts, but I think in general, as people in our generation get older, there will be less value derived from it unless there's some radical change in the way social media is used and perceived by society.
What do you want from it?
I'm going to get real deep here. So part of me wants it to be filtered down, but then part of me wonders if that's what's best for me as a developing person and for freedom of thought and just discussion of opinions. Because sometimes I'll turn on an outlet, whether it be any kind of social media, any kind of traditional media, and I'm like, I don't want to hear any of this. These people are idiots. You know, I want to hear a topic that I'm interested into, and that's what all the data drives for us. You know, they learn more about us. They can cater better to us. They can give us the information they want or we want. But then the other side of me thinks, is that better for me to be a worldly human being? Should I always be blocking out the things I don't want to hear? What I want out of social media is some sort of divisive way to filter out things that I think are noise, you know, that are just people aren't actually trying to contribute to a discussion, or they're making an argument that's illogical or it has a logical fallacy in it, and bring more of the intelligent discussion and more of the interesting topics to light. I don't know if that's even possible. I've thought to myself, would the internet be a much better place if there was some sort of test you had to take where when you're arguing a point or discussing something, you don't use personal attacks. You don't bring up some sort of appeal to a religion or things like that that are traditional logical fallacies when you are discussing things. Would that be a way to clean up the internet? As absurd as that sounds, but I don't know. I think about this a lot.
What should this box do for you to help you expand as a person? If you want to expand as another person, what's your expectations of it? That's out of being this portal to look at pictures and get news. You're connected to all these people. Do you have an expectation? Is it right to have an expectation of it?
I mean, I think we've grown to have expectations of it, being that it's, you know, this quote-unquote box is such an integral part of almost everyone's life. But I mean, really, my own expectations, I want to talk to the people that I want to talk to. I want to look at funny pictures of cats, and I want to play video games, and that's pretty much it.
So you don't want any more?
And I want to read the news, obviously, but I think that goes along with, you know, talking to people and sharing information.
So, Nupur, do you have any other, like, wants or expectations out of this tool?
Or do you I think I agree with everything Kevin said, minus the video games. But, like, I'm not opposed to other people enjoying video games. I just, that's not something that I expect. What do you expect, Joey?
Oh.
Haha, you have turned it around.
Tables have turned.
I don't know. What I was going to say to you guys is, like, so 50 years from now, yeah, computers have gotten faster and brighter, and are we still going to be looking at, like, holographic cat videos? Still sort of the same thing? Does it become some other thing? Are we making connections as human beings in a different way because of technology? Or is it just, like, a higher resolution, a faster box, and it's sort of, we've reached some plateau? John, you're on Reddit, and now there are all these people that are running around with these dash cams.
Yeah.
So they're recording, like, every second that they're driving. And some people in, like, China, they do it for insurance reasons. And I think in Russia, too.
For sure, yeah.
And, in, like, in America, it's sort of more for sport. Oh, look, I did something cool. So are we just going to be recorded all the time? And does that become something where every moment's recorded? And did you see that episode of Black Mirror where, like, every second is always recorded? So if people get into a fight, they could just rewind and replay it. And you're like, no, I didn't say that. And I did say that.
I have not, but that's interesting. And I think some people were kind of getting to the progression of communication. And there's some people, I forget the exact term, I think they call it, they believe in, like, a singularity or something to that effect, where at a certain point we're all just going to be so in tune with each other that our communication are all just, we're one large hive mind kind of thing. That's what I think is eventually going to happen. I mean, we're constantly breaking down barriers between, things are going to keep developing, the way people interact are going to keep changing, and I don't know. I mean, there used to be segmented populations everywhere, and now it's like there's so little barrier to everything that I can't imagine how much it's going to change. I think it's exponentially changing as we speak. So
right,
that's, like, a very tough question to answer.
Again, whether or not there's a chip in your head that gives you your social media feeds, or you're using a monitor, have we fundamentally changed the way that we're interacting in the world? Everything is digitized. Everything is available. And the means and way we consume it or distribute it, that might get better and change. But it just feels like there's a sort of thematic plateau that we've reached.
There's only so many different ways you can share a cat video, right? Argue about the fact that you think the owner is hurting the cat by smacking it with a little, like, stuffed animal, and then people counter-arguing that argument, and then somebody sharing it on a certain site, and yeah, I guess there's a speed of communication that may not be able to be breached, I guess, if that's what you're getting at.
Now that we have a vehicle for the information and the vehicle to communicate, do we change the way that we communicate? Is that the next step?
I think we might have to change the way we think and try to. I think there's plenty of people trying to push the limits of cognitive ability. And I don't know, personally, I really like that movie Limitless, and it made me very intrigued about nootropics and just things that enhance the brain's ability to process information. And I wonder if that's the next step to upgrade us to catch up to the speed of future communication and things like that, and just become more, I don't know, intelligent in a sense, maybe, if that's what intelligence is. We're breaking new right, boundaries.
We're breaking boundaries.
This is the brain trust right here. I just push forward my own opinion about everything.
Is the next step that there won't be a you and a me that's doing this? It's just some computer that's using our brain algorithms. You're not managing your own social media account. You have some thing that knows your personality, and they're tweeting and posting your cat pictures for you.
That seems just too dystopian for, like, even a book.
It was actually in that John Ronson book. They created some algorithm of that guy based on his past tweets, and it actually started tweeting like him.
I can't really envision a world where people are saying, you know what, I'll just relinquish my critical thought to a computer and let it live my life for me.
Oh, I feel like people are doing that now.
It may seem that way.
I'm going to ask you one more question, and we'll wrap it up. You guys kind of dipped into this concept of privacy, which we didn't really talk about. So as you're interacting with social media and it's sharing things like your location and other bits of personal information, where do you see that being the line of an invasion of privacy? And when do you feel like that's potentially dangerous for you, for them to share potential location information where it could potentially, someone can find you where you may not want them to, if you didn't realize there were certain settings turned on?
That's, like, a really complicated situation. I think sometimes it can be harmless, but, like, if it gets into the wrong hands, it's kind of creepy. Sometimes I like all the like metadata and stuff when things are suggested for you and stuff like that. I think it's helpful sometimes, but then at the same time, it's slightly creepy because it's like everyone's just taking all of this information about you. I think it could be both of those things. It could be beneficial and it could be a negative thing depending on the situation.
I mean, I definitely agree that it's, you know, it's not necessarily black or white, but I mean, you can call it a quote-unquote invasion of privacy, however you want to define that. But in the grand scheme of things, a few data points in millions, billions, trillions, quadrillions, however many there are out there, that in the grand scheme of things, it's not really that big a deal.
I am going to avoid taking this down another rabbit hole, but I think it's already surpassed the point where it can be dangerous for you in the sense that if the government thinks that you're providing some opinion or driving some force that they don't like, they can kind of tap into whatever they need to figure out about you. But I mean, it's up to us to determine how that works. You know, you don't have to share certain things in public to gain certain popularity. So I mean, I think it's up to the user, really. I mean, it's you're in control of your own destiny to a certain extent. So I don't know, but I think we've already surpassed a point of, you know, you can't go off the grid unless you are literally off the grid. So that's my take on it. But it's going to be okay.
Because we can tweet about it.
And see funny cat videos.
Right. And there's always that funny cat video. All right, guys. Well, I think we covered it. I think we hit it all. Thank you for joining. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. I'm going to start calling you Dr. Joey. We're getting philosophical.